Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, should software be protected? The Queen of England is on the cutting edge of tech, and a new era in aeronautics presages a great era in flight. It's the biggest tech stories of this, the year of our Lord, 1976. This is the Daily Tech News Show, Best of 1976. Here, celebrating the bicentennial in Greenville, Illinois, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Santa Cruz, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Let's look back at the top tech stories of 1976. Some of us may be time travelers and occasionally show knowledge that we possibly shouldn't have. Just bear with us. Microsoft's Bill Gates wrote an open letter to hobbyists, first published back in February of 1976, in the Homebrew Computer Club newsletter in Mountain View, California. It was also published in the Micro 8 Computer User Group newsletter, as well as Computer Notes, Mini Computer News, People's Computer Company, and Radio Electronics No. 5. The letter was in response to users copying code to implement BASIC on the MIT's 680B, which is based on Motorola's 6800 processor. Of course, we all know hardware has to be paid for, but software is just something you put into the hardware. You can just copy it. And Gates objects to this because it means that he and his friends are selling fewer quote-unquote copies of their version of BASIC, which Gates argues costs money to develop. He also argues that this prevents good software from being written because there's no financial incentive for people to sink in the investment to write good software. Gates asked people to voluntarily pay for the software that they have copied, good luck with that, and gave out the company's New Mexico address for such purpose, as well as welcoming suggestions or comments, which I thought was nice. Gates wrote, quote, "Nothing would please me more than being able to hire 10 programmers and deluge the hobby market with good software."
Oh, wow. Where do we start with the idea of, in 1976, people being like, hold on, so if somebody could just like steal software? That isn't right. They should not do that.
No, Bill Gates obviously doesn't understand the hobbyist world he's living in, or perhaps he does understand it and is trying to bully people into paying for something that's free. Software is free in 1976. The idea hold software in.
Not
that
for you, long.
That you could
not
somehow. Well, I don't know where you're getting this idea from, Sarah.
I would like to interject that I would like to draw an analogy, if I may. You are allowed to write on a blank piece of paper any sort of letter, correspondence, piece of fiction, or perhaps an observation, and submit it and hand it out free to anyone that would be willing to read it. However, we also have authors, reporters, people who also use the same system in order to jot down their thoughts, and yet they demand some level of compensation. For a journalist, it's to be paid by a newspaper. For an author, it's to be paid for their book by their publisher. I mean, is it any different?
I get where you're coming from, Roger, but traditionally, software is just the thing that makes the hardware run, and you're taking away my right to run it the way I want because maybe the way I want to run the software is similar to someone else. I don't want to get into a George Harrison situation where I'm getting sued by the chiffons because my sweet lord is similar to He's So Fine. I don't want that to apply to software. I want software to be like a recipe. If I have a recipe for a great mushroom casserole, I'm not going to get sued by the Campbell's company for passing that along. Recipes are free. Anybody can make them because everybody cooks. Same with software. Everybody writes software. You can't say my recipe for executing instructions on the chip is somehow protected. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but like if you had a player piano, would you not play for the music scroll that would be needed for it to play the music? Or do you think all that music that's been pre-processed be allowed free access by anyone who wants it without payment or compensation?
It's whether do we want software to be treated as music or as food? That's what it comes down to.
Turns out, Tom, you have to pay for both.
No, you don't. No one pays
not
for software.
Not in 1976.
No one pays for software in 1976. Why do you think Bill Gates had to write letters to hobbyists?
Sorry, letters? It's hard for me to... I'm like, wait, no, we're in 1976. Got it. Well, speaking of 1976, a little thing happened on the way to the theater. Homebrew Computer Club member Steve Wozniak and his partner Steve Jobs took the world by storm with an affordable, adaptable, open microcomputer called the Apple for $666.66.
Ah, clever.
Ha ha. Yeah. Offered a video terminal and 8 kilobytes of RAM on a single PC card. Hey, how about that? The company emphasized that its version of BASIC is free and has stated that, quote, our philosophy is to provide software for our machines free or at minimal cost.
See, Apple gets it. Steve Wozniak gets it. The software isn't where you make the money. People will write software. They'll want to write software for their machines. This is an ingenious mini computer, though. This is a very efficient board that Wozniak has made here. It's really incredible.
I'm impressed because, as we all know, coming from the Altair and other hobbyist kits, this goes some way to reducing the gap between the everyman and the enthusiast who prefers to work on their own electronics mm-hmm. and has the know-how, the tool set, and frankly, the time to put one of these together. I think in the future we might see more of these and perhaps a completed model from a large retailer like a Montgomery Ward's or a JCPenney's or even a Macy's.
I think what I love about this is all you need is the case, really. And Apple's talking about possibly offering a second version of its computer that would include the case. Can you imagine how accessible that would be if everyone, not just us, but everybody could just pick up a computer, plug it in, and start going.
I think I'm most impressed by the included video terminal. I mean, like having some form of video output instead of just outputting straight to a printer.
Yeah.
Or heaven forbid, even just like a punch card, mm-hmm. I think is pretty impressive considering the price that they're asking. I mean, that's relatively cheap. I mean, my mom's bank had to put down more than $2 million.
Oh yeah, the
for
price
a
on
computer
this
is
like nothing for yeah. a computer.
Your mom's bank had to put down $2 million.
Yeah, to pay for a mini computer that did the.
Wow.
She had to spend an entire course at the University of San Francisco to learn how to program it on punch cards. I have stacks of them at home.
Wow.
That is crazy. It is a most impressive feat.
Imagine, Sarah, though, if you didn't have to do that, if you could just buy a computer already in a case, you don't have to do any assembly even,
and plug sounds
it in your,
great,
like your television as your display.
I don't want that hassle.
And it comes with BASIC. How crazy is that? You don't need to understand how the chip works. You have a very easy to use.
$666.66.
You have a very easy human understandable programming language. BASIC. I mean, it's as, forgive the pun, as basic as you can get.
And that price is only going to come down, right? I mean, that sure, it seems like a lot in 1976. I'm guessing an Apple computer in 10 years will cost you like $100.
Oh, well, you know, we are in a period of high inflation, so maybe $300.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, 76, you know, kind of crazy year. Bicentennial, after all. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows? Who knows?
All right. Electronic mail. I know most of you all out there have heard of it, but it's a perk that's available to people who work in academic institutions, military institutions, people who have access to ARPANET and know how to work the system. But that may be changing. Back in March, while visiting the Royal Signals and Radar Establishment in Malvern, England, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II sent an electronic mail of her own. The Royal Signals and Radar Establishment had just implemented electronic mail, and the Queen becomes the first head of state to send electronic mail. Of course, one of the first people to send it. There's not that many people using it. She was identified on the system as HME2, Her Majesty Elizabeth II. The Queen announced a new language available on the system in her electronic mail, which read, "This message to all ARPANET users announces the availability on ARPANET of the Coral 66 compiler provided by the GEC 4080 computer at the Royal Signals and Radar Establishment, Malvern, England. Coral 66 is the standard real-time high-level language adopted by the Ministry of Defense."
I love how you were like kind of doing her voice, even though totally clearly she didn't actually write this.
I felt the pinky finger with the teacup in my head.
This message to all ARPANET users.
Adopted by the Ministry of Defense.
This I think signals.
I know we're supposed to be in 1976. So like, let's say I'm in 1976 at this point. Yeah, no, we are. We totally are. Yeah. I mean, that's
Gerald Ford.
Feels very, I don't know, forward thinking on the part of the majesties.
Yeah, the queen is very tech forward. It's not the first.
Apparently so.
You could write this off, especially because she was obviously sending a pre-prepared message. You could write this off as like, oh, they brought her in, told her to push a button. She probably didn't even know what was going on. She knew what was going on. In fact, I'll predict, Sarah, in the future, she'll have something called an iPod mini of her own.
Oh, please, Tom, don't get crazy.
But no, she historically, and I imagine it will continue that way, is very interested in technology. So even if she didn't compose the message very clearly, I bet she was curious and asked questions about how it all worked and was very, very into it.
I mean, in all honesty, for, you know, a lot of people who are like, email, I don't know, I heard about in
email
the mid-90s kind of thing. This is pretty major. Think about this. In 1976, this is something that was happening that, sure, the consumer market wasn't available to them. But it already existed, and it had been going for some time.
And helped popularize it, right? This helped get more people to understand it was a thing that could happen.
What I find interesting is that the British monarchy is so forward looking. I mean, it's not just the electronic mail that's so impressive. Is that just through the ages they've adopted a lot of new technologies like the telephone, television, but I mean they were things that weren't just treated as mere curiosities,
sure,
as things that definitely have some sort of future that could be implemented, not just within with the realm of like aristocracy or anything like that, but, you know, a usable technology for the benefit of the nation.
If you have a thought about something that we're talking about on the show, drop us a letter. Of course, we're at 11870 Santa Monica Boulevard, number 106553, Los Angeles, California, 90025. Or if you have access to electronic mail, you can use that. feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tom, who has that?
I know. It's maybe this episode, Sarah, will last long into the future, past the year 2000, and be heard by people who think of electronic mail as just a regular part of their everyday lives. 1976 saw big advances in not just aeronautics, but aerospace. So let's start with space. The first of NASA's two unmanned spacecraft sent to Mars landed on July 20th. The Viking 1 sent back photos of the Martian surface. The lander has two cameras, three analyses from metabolism, growth, or photosynthesis, a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer, an X-ray fluorescence spectrometer, pressure, temperature, and wind velocity sensors, a three-axis seismometer, a magnet on a sampler observed by the cameras, and various engineering sensors. If there's someone walking around on Mars, the Viking 1 is going to find them and let us know they're there. While the moon landing program is on pause for now, visits may become easier and more frequent thanks to the Space Shuttle. This is a reusable spacecraft that can head off to orbit and then land back on Earth to fly again. It was unveiled September 17th, and the prototype has been named the Enterprise after the famous science fiction vessel in the TV show Star Trek. They were going to name it the Constitution, but Star Trek fans still exist and wrote in to convince NASA to name it the Enterprise. In fact, the cast and producer of Star Trek were on hand for the unveiling. The Enterprise is a prototype that will be used to test out all the systems to make sure it's spaceworthy before other shuttles are built and launched into orbit. So, while we wait for shuttles to begin taking us frequently to space and back, we'll be able to get around the world even faster right here on Earth, thanks to a supersonic jet, the Concorde. Launched its first commercial flight January 21st from Heathrow, making it from London to New York in 2 hours and 52 minutes. Quite a bit shorter than the weeks it used to take our parents on a ship not that long ago.
Goodness gracious. 2 hours, 52 minutes. Are you kidding me?
I'm going to say, like, the unmanned spacecraft to Mars is huge. I mean, until then, we had to live with Brave Bradbury books, Ray Bradbury books.
One of those.
Or one of those. Or, you know, like your old Red Red Planet movies. I think it's kind of cool. I mean, I can't wait to see what we get to see. I mean, do you think there'll be, like, creatures and stuff, though, Kat?
Well, that's
Right? It's 1976. I mean, let's get crazy and say, like, the year 2000, obviously, we'll all be living on Mars.
Well, right. We have sent an unmanned spacecraft to Mars. We're about to have frequent shuttles to the moon and back, basically. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to fly here on Earth by the year 2000. 2 hours and 52 minutes will be, it'll be like a half hour. You'll be able to just pop over from New York to London in a half hour. You'll be able to take a shuttle. The shuttle to the moon will take 2 hours and 52 minutes, and there'll probably be people headed to Mars and
there's
planet
probably
going
to be like a cool like place to like, you know, like a cool restaurant on Mars.
This is literally less than 10 years past the release of 2001
A Space Odyssey is
Space Odyssey.
I will predict that the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey will look dated by the year 2001. You'll look at it and think, "Oh my gosh, that we're way past that."
Yeah, like, can you imagine, like,
what
was happening?
What will it look like? I mean, how can you imagine? I mean, that was so cutting edge. Like, what will it look like? I mean, my mind struggles to conceive of what wondrous things would actually take its place.
We'll have incredibly fast flights. Getting around the planet Earth will be nothing. You'll be able to go everywhere. We'll be
30 minutes.
We'll be colonizing the moon. Obviously.
Doesn't matter where you live.
Space shuttles flying us back and forth, and we'll be headed to Mars. Yeah. All right, Sarah. What do we got next?
Keeping with the theme, we knew what was coming, happening at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. And that was the first Cray computer. Oh, yes, the first Cray computer. The Cray 1 installed. Not the first supercomputer, but very compact, relatively affordable, seemed pretty great to a lot of folks who were interested in it at the time. Even had a ring of benches around the outside for workers to sit on it while using it. That's how big the Cray was. And while smaller, not lesser. In fact, faster, and it's much larger than its much larger brethren. The systems improved the performance of math operations and arranging memory and registers to quickly perform single operations on a set of data. Not the first to do it is the Cray, but the first to do it in a way that didn't limit performance. Very important there. How long can it be before every business can afford the price and room to have a supercomputer in the back room? I can't imagine it.
You put this news together with the Apple development, and you get an idea that in the future, maybe computers are in every place, you know, restaurants, accountants, and those will have Cray-like things. I bet they'll get smaller and smaller, and then Apple type things for the home, and everybody's sending electronic mail back and forth.
This is supposedly, according to the brochures, this machine will be capable of processing 80 will be capable of running at 80 megahertz.
Also, like,
80 megahertz.
Like you mentioned brochures. Imagine, if you will, being back in the, like, how do you share news of this, like, great new supercomputer? Brochures. Where do they go? Like, I don't know. They get dropped on people's doorsteps.
Yeah. Sales calls, trade shows, that kind of thing.
But, like, what are you?
You have to really want to know about this to know about it.
I mean, like, is this something just for the universities and research institutions and government agencies?
No, this is much more affordable. Yeah.
But, like, how do we harness this power? I mean, 80 megahertz, just so you know, that Apple we were glowing over is less than a single megahertz.
Yeah.
So it would take more than 80 of those.
80 apples plus.
and it still wouldn't be the equivalent of this processor. That this is a 64-bit processor. I mean, right now we're working with 8 bits,
yeah,
and we still don't know what to do with it.
Also, they're comfy. Have you ever sat on one?
I have not. I hope
that's
to see
the best part of this is, like, listen, when you have to, like, hang out with your supercomputer for a while,
yeah,
you can, you know, sit on the side and kind of be comfortable while,
yeah,
doing so.
When you're reading the friggin' manual, you can just sit outside and be like, all right, hold on.
I'm going to confess something, Tom.
My supercomputer has a cool seat.
I have a confession to make. I secretly want to see if you can make some sort of game on this device and what it would look like. I mean,
that
right
seems
now
like
we have
a frivolous use of this power.
I mean, come on. Right now we have Space War, which is a grand game, and it's so much
fun. But Pong ain't bad either.
Certainly, can you imagine the number of people that could be able to access this machine to play a very immersive game?
Why imagine who would let people access their supercomputer to play a game, Roger?
What I'm telling you, Tom, is I think the future will be where people feel entertained as they use this technology, because that will coerce or at least indulge them to use it more.
I think I'll stay at the pinball arcade myself. I don't see this sort of thing being wasted on frivolous
on games.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is for serious use.
It's for science.
For
Roger.
Science, for business, for accounting, yeah. Spreadsheets
yeah.
could be adapted into things like this.
Yeah, you would
have
like,
them
the
spread
general
out on your
public
actual desk.
Isn't going to like need some sort of like I don't know, great big old computer to
let me leave you with this thought. If you had a machine this powerful, you could create a simulation of a virtual world, perhaps. But in that essence, isn't that kind of a game-like reality as well? I mean, the same way that Space War would replicate on a very abstract level.
I suppose.
I suppose maybe a small percentage might do that. I can't imagine it turning into an industry or anything.
I mean, imagine the general public caring about stuff like that.
Right. No.
They're not going to care about that.
They're not going to waste their money on that. Yeah.
No.
I suppose you're right.
All right.
And who's got like an office room where they're going to put a computer in there and make it like the office room.
Yeah,
and
you don't want your den is a place where you escape from the world. Not
right. Yeah, I mean, nobody's gonna do that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy. And like the kids won't care.
No, they're gonna be outside playing jarts.
Yeah,
and slip and slide.
playing lawn darts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I think we could let down what little pretense we have left that it's 1976, and give people a little kind of overview from, okay, we've traveled in time to 2021. I think the thing that surprised me and depressed me the most in preparing the show was the aeronautics section. The one where it's like, man, I forgot. I remember all of these stories. I was 6 years old and I remember looking at the Viking images on the news and thinking, oh my gosh, that's Mars. That's actual Mars. I remember the Space Shuttle Enterprise flying on the back of an American Airlines jet for its test run and thinking, we're just going to be flying up into space. It's like an airplane. Everybody will be able to get on one. And the Concorde is the most depressing one because we don't even have the Concorde anymore. Like, they retired it. We can't go 2 hours and 52 minutes from Heathrow to JFK anymore.
Yeah, like that sounds great. We're not doing that.
Well,
not in 2021.
What I find most remarkable is kind of the optimistic tone of all these news stories, and not just the way they were written, but just the way people looked at things
in
as
a very
the future.
Unoptimistic time. Remember, this is
yes.
the middle of the Ford administration in the U.S., which was after Nixon resigned. Trust in government, you think it's low now. It was real low. Rampant inflation, stagflation,
and the, unemployment. You know, there's going to be a coming gas crisis, which people...
The gas lines, all of that stuff.
So, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of things to look forward to. And I remember, as a child, it was a little after the Enterprise when they launched Columbia, which was the first space going space shuttle. We took an entire hour out of my first grade class to watch it on the TV, and our teacher kept telling us, this is a huge moment in history. This is akin to like man landing on the moon. Remember this because it will be something you'll see on a regular basis. And it was up until the last shuttle mission at the turn of the 20th century, and then things kind of fell into a plateau. But the tone is so much promise, so much optimism, and it is very remarkable, especially from the time period it came from.
Also, I was trying to capture that feeling, Sarah, of people in 1976 that's charging for software. Bill Gates was a nut. People thought Bill Gates was a greedy nut when he wrote this letter, and it's just so difficult to put yourself in that mindset in the world we live in now, where it's like, no, everybody agrees piracy is bad. Even people who do piracy know they're sneaking around doing something. And it was that way.
And just like the idea that somebody who's like, listen, I know what I'm doing and you can't, you know, copy this. That's not right. And that still isn't right. And there are a lot of lawsuits, every day about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that there weren't really many software, I don't know, there wasn't a lot of software programs to copy at the time.
Well, and what there was freely traded. People would just give people like, oh, you're using an Altair? Here, take my program. This is what I worked on it. You can use it. It was that culture that Bill Gates waded into with this open letter. There was no law around it at the time.
Yeah.
And he was trying to convince people
don't do it.
Don't give my stuff around. You can give your stuff around, I guess, if you want, but I'm trying to build a business over here.
Sure.
Many
a lawyer was born.
Well, there was a very permissive culture. If you went to I went to my cousin's university campus, and it was a thing. Like, you went to the software lab, you went to the computer lab, and that was a thing. Like, people would just have blanks. They would come in and say, oh, I need to run this on the other end of campus or whatever. Because at the time, remember, home computers were still a very small niche and very expensive thing. And so most people... It wasn't like copying like a movie or music where you could just take it home. You had to go to another part of the campus or a corporation.
And people, I brought up the recipe, the cooking thing, because that's how people felt in 76 and for years afterwards, which is like, no, this is like, you know, maybe if I came up with a really clever piece of software, I'd protect it like a secret recipe like grandma did. But I'm not going to like stop. Most people are like, yeah, sure, I can give you my recipe for making the computer do the thing. Like, it was just a whole different way. And that's where that piracy clash in the 90s came from, is you had that, still had that mindset clashing with the Bill Gates mindset, which is like, I want to do it differently. Let me lay out the reasons why it should be done the way I'm talking about. And that fizzled out, I think, during the dot-com era, and now everybody's like, oh yeah, no, software should be protected. It's just a matter of how much and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Don't steal my software, bro.
Unless it's open source. We've kind of cordoned off all of the hobbyist mentality into the open source area. Well, if you're open source, okay, then you can give your software away. And that's for you all. The rest of the business world lives around.
Well, and that was something that had to be like, that wasn't a thing.
No, because
you had to sort of figure out like who kind of feels like software should be shared amongst us all. Okay, open source community, great.
Open source was the default in 76. They wouldn't have understood the idea of open source because they're like, well, yeah, all source code is open. What are you talking
about?
Sure. Why would I need to open it?
And you're like, wait a second.
Yeah, I'm
losing money.
Anyway. Also the Queen. I mean, I had to shove in the iPod thing there because I don't know if she had other examples. There probably are before that 76, but she definitely is tech forward and has always been so.
I mean, it's definitely it surprised me with the more I learned back, like, you know, a couple of decades ago, learning about like, you know, how the Royal House of Windsor or whatever works.
I have actually sat on a Cray at these guys down in almost near Santa Cruz, actually.
Oh, the computer barn.
Yeah, the computer barn had a cray that they let me sit down, and it was padded. It was very nice.
And that was that was.
I love the idea of like being like, I just want to be near you, computer.
Well, the idea was the computer was also on you. Furniture, so you wouldn't have to like, you know,
right.
It's going to take up a bunch of space.
Anywhere else.
Make it usable. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I keep forgetting is that Apple didn't start out from a business computer like the rest of like even Commodore was a business oriented, you know, technology company. And here's a couple of guys like, yeah, you know, during our spare time, we cobbled this together and then we're going to build a business out of it.
Wozniak created a better hobbyist computer and Jobs was like, I can help you sell that. And Jobs knew new technology. I'm not trying to downplay his tech specs, but Wozniak was the genius who built it. Jobs was the genius who knew how to sell it. And he knew how to sell it to other hobbyists because he wasn't selling it to businesses at first. That came later.
He was a marketing guy, but he also understood the way people used things. Like
he was a tech guy, not just a marketing guy, but you're right. That his genius was in knowing how people use things for sure. Well, folks, we want you to be like the queen. Send us an electronic mail. Our electronic mail address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We hope you're all having great holidays. We'll be back with live episodes coming up after the 1st of January. So come back and see us then.
Indeed. And thank you for looking back on the big stories of the year 1976, y'all. What a time to be alive. I had just been born. I can't wait to see what happens in 1977, and we'll do that again next year. We'll be covering it all at dailytechnewsshow.com just as soon as they make the domain name system really widespread. I don't want to hold my breath on that.
Probably come in the 80s.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.